big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to the Contemplations of the Lotus Eaters. I'm Hugo and I'm here with Josh.
Hello.
And this is a show where we're not necessarily focusing on current events, but instead we take some topics that we thought would be valuable and interesting for you, the viewers, and we go deeper and present them as best as we can. And so today we're going to be focusing on politics and personality. We'll be looking at how different personality traits map onto political beliefs and political preferences. And Josh is going to explain everything about it because he's the expert here.
So yeah, this topic was something that was very much requested, and I do know a decent amount about it. So I thought it'd be interesting to build upon what's kind of commonly known. I know that people are familiar with, generally speaking, people are familiar with the difference between liberals and conservatives and how it kind of relates to the big five, but I'll get into that in a second. First, I thought it would be important to go through a very short history of the research in this area, because it actually, where it came out of, really shapes how people talk about it, particularly up until, say, the 1990s, where it took its kind of, it formalized and crystallized as its own kind of discipline. But
so before that, it was based on historical research or something like that?
Yes. So most of the personality research came out of the desire to understand the actions of the Nazis in the 1940s.
Okay.
And they were like, well, did these people have any particular personality traits? They wanted to understand how human beings could be capable of doing things like that to other mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the earlier research is rooted in that and trying to understand kind of right-wing authoritarianism. So I'd like to just read out a little quote which summarizes this view quite well. This is by a researcher known as Maccabee, who elaborated on the kind of view that was around the Frankfurt School, which we're all very skeptical of here, who was based on that of Freud and the researcher Fromm. So it's kind of a Freudian kind of left-wing understanding of it. So, you know, take it with a pinch of salt. I don't necessarily agree with it, and you'll see why in a second. So I'm just going to read this quote, which was published, actually wasn't published, but it was written in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, "A person with intense love of life is attracted to that which is alive, which grows, which is free and unpredictable. He has an aversion to violence and all that destroys life, dislikes sterile and rigid order, rejects being mechanized, becoming a lifeless part of a machine-like organization. He enjoys life in all its manifestations, in contrast to mere excitement or thrills. He believes in molding and influencing by love, reason, and example rather than by force. At the other pole, there are individuals attracted to that which is rigidly ordered, mechanical, and unalive. These people do not like anything free and uncontrolled. They feel that people must be regulated within a well-oiled machine." So I don't think that's a very modern understanding of how personality influences politics.
So are they basically describing the libertarian authoritarian spectrum or something like that? Like, that sounds a bit like that, like not completely, but something that is closer to that than to explaining differences in political views.
Well, it was very much rooted, as I said, from the kind of understanding mm-hmm. of the actions in the 1940s. But this is supposedly meant to represent the left and right.
Yeah.
Which is a very one-sided and unflattering version of that. But it's unsurprising because it comes from the Frankfurt mm-hmm. School,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of a hive of Marxism.
We like nice things.
Yeah, they're not going to say negative things about their own kind of side, are they? I mean, it's unsurprising, but it moves away from this biased belief. But there's still some research focus on this kind of right, far-right personality style. So...
So you say that some of it continues until today, right? And some of that research.
In that there are relics of it, but right. not it's far more balanced than it used to be in the past. They're not so focused on understanding just the kind of like cross section of the extreme right. They kind of want to understand how regular people interface with politics.
So in the quote that you read just a bit ago, there was this separation between, on the one side, something that is normal, something that is nice, human, and on the other hand, it described being right-wing as some kind of a pathology, right?
Yeah.
And so is that something that is present in some portion of that research until today? I know you said that it's not the majority approach.
No. So in the part that's inherited now is that they've focused on... There's been a disproportionate amount of focus on extremism, and a lot of that is focused on the right just as an inheritance of post-World War II. Right. So it's not necessarily representative of any political bias because even going into the kind of 1970s, they take far more of a nuanced view. And so
the difference, the main difference is that they're not focusing just on extremism anymore, but they're focusing on genuine normal political differences between people, and that's what they're starting to study after the 60s when it was just about the extremism.
Yeah. Okay. So it was kind of post-World War II, and you can kind of understand why they would want to to look at that. So it's not necessarily, although it is largely left-wing people who started this research, it's not necessarily as insidious as it might seem at first. So...
Well, you started with this quote.
I know. But it's important because people might go and find older research and they might be like, wow, this is clearly far left. Like,
no, I think that's a useful context to have, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So the view of kind of liberalism and conservatism saw the former associated with kind of humanism, creativity and openness and emotional expression and... particularly enthusiasm and excitement, and the kind of conservative side associated with norm attainment, conscientiousness and morality. So it kind of sees virtues in both sides as it kind of continues, and the distinction between liberal and conservative, the labels aren't necessarily important in these cases. It's just that there's a psychometric dimension, a scale, and liberal represents one side and conservative the other. So they're just placeholders for something that exists.
Right.
And the research in it is very upfront about these labels probably being unsatisfactory. And I think in the modern day, a liberal might not actually be considered left-wing. Like, particularly a classical liberal such as myself, you know, it'd probably be called either... kind of towards the centre or right wing, depending on who's saying it.
And so if they're taking these two personality, kind of whatever, like basic personalities, then and they're drawing a line between them and saying, okay, real people are somewhere between, somewhere on the line between them. Is it that there are these broadly like big two camps, according to which people are divided? Right. So for example, you could have another kind of matrix where you had like 7 points and people would converge towards 7 points and you had clusters around those points. But you said that the research has been focused on two. So you have two of those clusters.
Yeah. This is more of a kind of practical scientific point I'm going to make here, in that when you're trying to research a kind of... a subject in its infancy, you kind of want to simplify it down, and you get an idea of the kind of nature of something, and then you refine it further and further.
Right.
So in it being kind of two separate poles, that's kind of the simplest iteration. It's not necessarily to say that all of politics can be placed on this scale. It's just that our current understanding, using the methods we are using, is more practical from a scientific standpoint to scale things along there. But there's no kind of what's the word?
Inherent reason for that or something.
Yeah, like the even the researchers acknowledge that it's not necessarily ideal to have it on the spectrum, because there are lots of things that seem to either be shared between the left and right, or unique to perhaps in some cases one side, but not present in all, even though they might place on the same kind of side of the spectrum. So it's a bit more complicated than it might seem, but it's a good general tool to understand things.
So how I'm imagining it, it would be political space, whatever universe, right? And that there you have like points, not necessarily like you don't necessarily have axes that mean something, but you have just like a space, and then in that you have certain archetypes of people who believe something, and you have certain bundle of beliefs, right?
Yeah, an archetype is a good way of putting it, because it's talking about these kind of virtues or traits or whatever you want to call it. That are associated with these almost like stereotypical versions or oversimplified versions of two different extremes or sides or however you want to frame it.
Yes, sorry, I just want to clarify that what I'm what I'm looking for is whether this research has just done that on like on those two archetypes, or whether it has some of the research has created more archetypes like that, and then try to kind of group people together according to those different ones, rather than just the quote liberal and conservative, which labels are not important here, but those two, right? So, but if I'm moving too much ahead, and you're going to get to this later, then we can stop.
Just to jump ahead a little bit to answer your question, but not to spoil anything. Okay. The Big Five Personality Index is a way of breaking down people's personality into five different traits. So they try and correlate political beliefs with values in these different traits, which makes it more separate, and it allows you to identify which aspects of which beliefs seem to associate with these certain personality traits.
Okay.
So they've gone more in the direction of, rather than breaking down the political side, to break down the personality side in psychology at the very least. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, we can get back to it when we know a bit more about the Big Five and just like how that works. So
yeah, I will be getting onto that. Yeah, but just to kind of summarize, a lot of the key studies in the 1970s found liberals scored very high in things like sensation seeking and imaginativeness, whereas conservatives scored higher than liberals on measures of self-control and orderliness. And this is starting to sound like something that's a bit less objectionable, right? In that to be a conservative, you've got to have some degree of self-control and orderliness, but to be consistent with your own beliefs, right?
Yeah. And it sounds better just by the fact that they're using flattering terms for both sides and not for just for one side.
Yeah.
Which even though there's not much of a difference, I feel in the content, the presentation makes it much better presentable.
Well, to kind of play devil's advocate, when it was kind of the early infancy of this area, they were trying to describe the kind of behavior of these extremists, so they're not going to necessarily want to paint them in the most flattering terms.
No, yeah, that's fair enough. I understand that completely, so it's fine.
So something I'd like to bring in that I just thought was interesting while I was actually researching, there's evidence that both European and American politics has been polarizing from about 2001 onwards, and this is only a rough threshold, I know, particularly in America 2001 is a key date, but it's not necessarily based on that. It just seems that some of the studies found it earlier, some of it found it a bit later, but it's around this sort of time. But it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the terrorist attack in New York. But a number of psychologists and sociologists seem to question the notion as well that most people are ideologically stable or consistent in any kind of profound sense. So they're kind of talking about the average person, the average voter. They're not necessarily that engaged with politics, and therefore to describe them in a particularly polarizing way along this scale sometimes cannot be very useful, because they don't necessarily have an understanding or identify with things. It's more just something that they do. Like they go to the ballot box and they kind of, in this earlier time, kind of around the 2000s, they're trying to make the point that there's not really much of a distinction between left and right in terms of political content. But
where would they say that the difference is? If it's not in the political content, they would still say that there is a difference, right? Or would you say that
it's by not really a difference? It's okay. Kind of like there's a consensus that, you know, democracy is a good thing, and
okay, continue, please.
But like you look at America in
of course.
Kind of the early 2000s, and there's not a whole lot of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans if you look at the vast sum of what is possible in politics. Yep. Like that, they've kind of moved very close together. And that's what they're trying to get at, that in this case, there's not really much of a profound difference amongst people or the political parties that they identify with. So it's not particularly useful to look at it, because it would only be very slight, if at all. And as the research has kind of gone on a little bit, I think there's been more of a revival of studying the different camps, because there's been a lot more kind of in-group identity associated with certain political camps.
Right.
Where it kind of has revived this understanding of the separation between the two.
So do you think if we move beyond psychology or beyond just political parties, that the moment that they were describing, saying that there's no real difference between in what most people think about politics and their political beliefs, is that something that has to do with this kind of end of history moment after the end of the Cold War, where it's like liberal democracy is the end goal and there's no moving elsewhere, and this is going to be the end of political development in the world, and we've reached kind of the peak?
I can't say for certain, but I certainly imagine that that's a part of it. Like, it'd be very difficult to separate that kind of view from this kind of time in the research.
Because that produces this kind of societal mood, right? So what people feel like is happening, and how society reacts to it, what it produces, the culture around it. So it's not just, okay, someone believes, well, a war has ended and so now it's all rosy, but just everyone rallies around the idea. It's like, okay, yeah, we've reached the end. And then as time goes on, new conflicts start appearing, because that always happens.
And in this time, just to take it back a bit, they said that most citizens failed tests of ideological sophistication, in that they didn't really have a very complete understanding of which ideological position that they belonged to, but they could at least use perhaps ideological constructs in a meaningful and appropriate way.
Right.
And that people were motivated by these kind of ideological commitments that they made as a guide in both their attitudes and their behaviour. So it's not necessarily that it was irrelevant to them, it was just that perhaps they were closer than they might otherwise be today or in the past, but they still did have some degree of effect. Like it seems like it was more of a moral guiding force than anything else at this point.
Okay, so they would say that there are different parties, but they're not that different, but they're a little bit different, and what people will vote for or prefer is going to be based on their morality and their values.
I would say so.
Yeah. Okay, and I guess that's how we get to the traits and stuff.
Yeah, so I would like to talk about the big five personality traits, because that's perhaps the most well-known and robust personality measure.
Right.
Although it's not the only one, it is the one that gets talked about the most and the one that people seem to be the most interested in as well.
Now, let's start with what traits are, right? Because
sure.
Like you've got this get the sense of what they might be, but like what's the definition that is actually used? And
so they're things that a team of researchers, so there were five teams of researchers working on developing tests to assess people's personality. And they all worked in isolation from one another, in separate teams, and some of them came up with four dimensions, some of them came up with seven or eight, but eventually they got to a point where it made sense to collaborate with all of their findings, and they put it all together and then test the subsequent model, which became the Big Five. And this was a product of very, very extensive statistical testing to see whether these different dimensions are valid and you can replicate the findings again and again and again. So although people hear about kind of the replication crisis in fields such as social psychology, in the field of kind of personality psychology, this doesn't seem to be a problem because they've worked very hard on getting these dimensions or these five things, which seem to be reflective of five different aspects of people's personalities, because they are consistently statistically significant. And also you can measure a construct's validity based on your retest reliability. So if you take the test once and then you take it again, you're going to get very similar results rather than it vary widely, which seems to suggest that it's measuring something that is in existence and it is objective rather than it varying hugely.
So these are people's kind of mental qualities or qualities that they have. So is it something that is basically a trait, is a bundle of behaviors that is kind of long lasting that you can predict? Or
So
is that a good summary of what a trait is?
So if you take something like extroversion, for example, which is one of the Big Five traits, it's about things being sociable, taking risks, and how many positive emotions you feel. And it can be broken down into things like your level of activity, how assertive you are, how cheerful you are, how much you seek excitement, how friendly you are, and how gregarious you are, as in how much you seek to be around other people. And these are the kind of characteristics or values that make up this larger thing. But they're behind every kind of one of the measures in the Big Five, there are kind of sub measures of these various things that make up the whole.
And those measures, what makes up the whole is your typical behavior.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it relies on you reporting it yourself. Yep. So it's your perception of your own behavior.
Yeah, of course.
So but it's got to be taken with a certain amount of like salt or a grain of salt, should I say.
But that's what the trait is. So it's a combination of some typical behaviors that you report about yourself.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, it's also your thoughts as well.
Like, yeah, of course.
There's the distinction between the two is quite often made, so it's important to kind of lump them in together So it's trying to describe who you are as a person in very simple terms. So I thought it'd be useful to look at the personality test that we took before this to kind of get a better understanding of what these tests mean, whether they're useful or not. And there are certainly some things that I feel are a bit iffy about these tests.
Okay. Because you didn't like your results.
Yeah, well, my results seemed like I was trying to get really high scores, and it kind of annoyed me because it looks like I was being disingenuous.
would it put you high on extroversion? I'm trying to achieve a lot.
That's actually conscientiousness.
Oh, okay.
But one of the ones that really annoyed me was that one of the measures of like conscientiousness is orderliness, and an aspect of that is like cleanliness. And I got really low on that, and I'm like I'm the complete opposite of that. Like I spend all my time like keeping a nice, clean, orderly apartment. I have everything's in its right place, pristine. I shower every morning. Even if I exercise, I shower again. So it's making me seem like I'm some grubby, unwashed person, because I scored I'll just get it up. it was something like 20th percentile out of 100, which was really bad. Oh, it was 37th, so it wasn't quite as bad, but it was still low. And I felt like I'm completely the opposite. If I were to get any more orderly, it would get to the point of being like some kind of neurotic condition. I'm constantly washing my hands like 24/7 and showering like 10 times a day. Like, what am I meant to do?
There is the cleanliness of the soul.
Apparently, I don't have a very clean soul then. But yeah, like it's not perfect. And even my own self-perception is inconsistent with the result.
It's not perfect because I cleaned my room.
Yeah, I listened to Jordan Peterson and I cleaned my room and I'm still getting low orderliness. So I'm afraid the measure is wrong.
Okay. So, so what do you take away from this? Like, you said that you wanted to contrast our results with our politics.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that?
So, I scored very highly on openness, which mm-hmm. is a predictor of liberal values. I got the 97th percentile, which is extremely high and makes me seem like a bit of an extremist. But I think it's because it's measuring both your interest in ideas and the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I like both music and, you know, dealing with philosophical, political and psychological ideas. I score very highly just because I have a combination of the two. And that's why I score highly on that. And of course, I am classical liberal. Therefore, it's not necessarily untrue that the high openness would be predictive of my kind of liberalism. But then I score 80th percentile on conscientiousness as well, which is a predictor of conservativeness. And
so which one of these then correlate with political camps? So openness, you said, with liberalism.
Yeah.
Not in the American sense, but just for the record.
If you're thinking about it on the mm-hmm. on the same scale that we were talking about earlier,
okay.
In that liberalism is kind of towards the left, yep. And conscientiousness and conservatism is on the right, mm-hmm. it's that kind of scale that it's reflective of.
Okay, so the other three?
They're not really found to correlate that much, although agreeableness and extroversion seem to be kind of more associated with perhaps the left, especially mm-hmm. agreeableness, and neuroticism isn't really associated with either.
Like right.
you can have neurotic people that will fall on either side, and it's mm-hmm. not necessarily, at least in the past when this research was formulated, particularly useful to look at. But as we'll get into in the dark side of personality tomorrow, it seems like there is some neurotic traits that seem to correlate with things like virtue signaling,
mm-hmm.
and I'll get into that a little bit more. I don't want to spoil tomorrow's episode, but I'm very excited to talk about it because I feel like it's very interesting stuff.
Okay. And so what about extroversion? I'm not sure if you mentioned that. Is that correlated with any of those?
It's about being around people, isn't it? So it's a very people focused thing. So I feel like it's loosely, I know that it seems to correlate more with the left than the right,
mm-hmm.
but it's not very strong. Like,
okay.
You can be extroverted and be either, right. And it doesn't really dictate that much.
Mm-hmm.
But the main two are the conscientiousness and the openness that you want to look at.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, what it says is that I'm a filthy centrist.
Yeah, you score pretty much equally between openness and conscientiousness, don't you? So, You're almost right in the middle, whereas I seem to be, according to my personality test, more on the left. But this is not the left as we might define it now, but more of a political understanding of it. Like, it's not about traditionalism and, like, on the right, it's more traditionalism and the preservation of order and things like that. And the left is about progressing in the future,
mm-hmm.
and it's not really surprising, like considering the system that I have in the UK that I'm living under, that I would want to change it. So it's not necessarily reflective of an objective value, because it's placing your view based on your own self-perception, right?
Right. So it depends on where you are and what your circumstance, like surroundings is.
Mm-hmm. At least that's the way I interpret it mm-hmm. as, anyway, because say I were living in a society I was perfectly happy with, I imagine I wouldn't really need to be that open to things, would I? Because I'm already accepting.
That's the question, though. Like whether like something that you're happy with, but you still have that quality as the personality trait that you mm-hmm. like new experiences and you're curious about new stuff mm-hmm. and you like innovation and things like that. And so it's not something. I know what you mean that the predisposition changes, but if it's something that is separate from that surroundings or if it's by a large margin kind of tied to it.
I think there's certainly some degree of developmental and biological component mm. to this, because there's kind of research of twin studies who've been separated and they have more similarities between their big five results than they would if they were just two separate people. So it suggests that there's some degree of heritability even when there was no shared environment,
mm-hmm.
and that's how we kind of delineate that. So there's certainly some degree of personality that you might not be able to change, but also there's a large amount of it that is environmental, and you living in the world, you kind of are shaping your behavior to accommodate for that and adapt to the world around you. You're not necessarily going to be exactly the same in every single situation
mm.
because it doesn't make sense to be that way, right? And that I feel explains that a bit better,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but it's not necessarily related to the big five per se, but just personality research in general.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your kind of overall takeaway with how well your big five results explained your political outlook? So I imagine you'd be pretty dissatisfied, right?
I don't know. I mean, if we're just taking conscientiousness and openness, just like mm-hmm. the two,
those are the main two that we should focus on.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty fair enough. I mean, I'm pretty liberal minded as well as you said, but not extremely so. I value kind of tradition, but not for tradition's sake, but for the sake of kind of stability as well. But I'm very much modernist in that way, in mm-hmm. the way of valuing progress. And so I feel like these two kind of fit well. Like not that one is not disproportionately higher than the other. That's what I wouldn't expect. And so these two being about the same mm-hmm. for me, then that's pretty much what I'm happy with, or mm-hmm. what would correlate, I think.
I think my extreme value on openness seems to be more reflective of my interest in music, which doesn't seem that related to politics.
But I feel like your conscientiousness and openness scores aren't that different either. So
yeah, there's kind of a degree of similarity, and I do side more towards the I feel like I would score higher on openness than conscientiousness, if I were to judge it without actually having done the test. But at the same time, I think it makes me seem more left-wing than I would otherwise call myself. Like I kind of view things in a kind of prism of whether they are useful or not. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm happy to preserve traditions, but as long as they actually benefit people.
Yep.
And it's not, I don't necessarily hold any special treatment to things in the past or perhaps new ideas in the future.
Mm.
It's whether I believe they'll work or not, or whether they'll promote the welfare of people.
Yep.
So
that's a good way to put it. I think that's what I was trying to say with mm-hmm. my own results before that. And I think if I were to predict before I took this test what I was going to get, I would probably guess that I would get more openness than conscientiousness, just by a little bit. It's the results are 61 conscientiousness and 58 openness. Mm-hmm. And so I would expect it to be maybe the other way around, or a little bit more openness than conscientiousness, just by the fact that I feel if I were to pick one, whether I'm more towards the kind of liberal modernist side or the conservative pre-modernist side, mm-hmm. I would pick the first. And so that's kind of the balance is a bit off, but on the whole I feel like this represents pretty much
sure
pretty well what I would mm-hmm. how I would think about myself.
I would have actually expected you to get higher in conscientiousness than me, because you seem to have a pretty good work ethic and you seem to work really hard. And it doesn't make sense that I would be like 19% higher on that to me. Like, I'd expect it to be lower for me.
Maybe you need high conscientiousness to offset the agreeableness.
That's true.
So I feel like you have pretty good work ethic as well. But as you said, I mean, you're supposed to have it much higher than I do. And I don't know, I can't say, but...
I suppose it's all relative, isn't it?
You also have much higher agreeableness and an extroversion than I have.
Yeah, and like agreeableness isn't necessarily a good thing. Like, just as an aside, like high agreeableness just means that people are more likely to take advantage of you. Like, you're more likely to go along with things that aren't necessarily in your interest just to be polite, which I don't actually feel like I do very much, but sometimes maybe just out of being a bit laid back about stuff, like I'm just like, oh, whatever. When it's not very high cost, I'm just like, okay. But if it came to something important, I certainly wouldn't be susceptible to that. But then I suppose at the 75th percentile, that's not, you've still got some degree of like speculation.
And so if I remember correctly, you had basically the full score in all of them, and except for sympathy.
That's right, yeah.
It was like 3% or something.
It was, yeah. Well, I was thinking about just the average person on the street that I don't know, and I think that made me like, you're not going to have sympathy for people you don't know, and especially in the abstraction, you don't create artificial hardships in your own mind. So it was more about my own reporting, my own perception.
Well, that's the same with me and trust. See,
yeah, I scored very high on trust and you scored ridiculously low, didn't you?
So with sympathy, I can see how it might have something to do with you living in like here and like the surroundings of this town. Like, this is not very sympathy friendly, like, because the strangers that you meet are not necessarily, like, you don't feel like they're good people.
They're coming up to you asking for change with kind of pockmarked and sores on their face, like clearly it's wanting to spend it on drugs. That's probably what you're alluding to in a more polite way.
Yeah, but what I meant more was that you feel like, you don't feel like that's the person that you want to help. That's the person that would deserve sympathy, right? That's more likely the people that you meet. And like, if you're elsewhere, like this is a very particular environment, because elsewhere where I've lived, the people that might have been poor or on the street or something, that they seem like they deserve your sympathy, or that they seem like there's something that has gone wrong and that you can help them in some way, and that this is something that you should do, and you feel like that. But you don't with the people that you meet around here, and that's very different. And so it's been very weird, a very weird experience for me as well, like walking around this town.
I would like to clarify, by the way, that with the people I know, I'm very sympathetic. It's only because in my mind, when I was answering the questions, I was just thinking of like in the abstraction.
Yeah.
And I think I probably did myself a bit of a disservice there in that.
No, but exactly how you talk about the sympathy results, the same thing is for me and trust. I was responding to those questions with kind of a general mindset, not for the people that I know, but for anyone, because that was the framing of the questions as answer. So exactly what you said about sympathy applies for me to trust. I mean, I don't feel like I have any reason to trust anyone that I don't know. That I feel like if I don't know anyone, I presume that they're acting on their own self-interest, that they have, that those interests might be all right, aligned with mine, but probably aren't. And so it's like, I don't have any reason to expect anything gooder of them. But then when I get to know them, and when I actually know what their motivations are and what people they are, then I have no reason not to trust them as well. Then
thing is, I feel exactly the same as that, but then I scored very high on trust because I was thinking about the people I actually know and interact with. And I was just like, well, I always give people the benefit of the doubt that they're, you know, telling the truth. And And I mean,
yeah, me, like, I do that with the people that I know as well, but with the people that I don't, I'm like completely like, no.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fair enough. And I'd be exactly the same, but I scored very highly and you scored very low on that, just so based on what mental construct you thought of to answer the question.
Might be a drawback of the test then.
That's exactly why I wanted to bring it up, because it's reliant on self-reporting, what you actually think of and the scenarios you think of shapes your answers to the test. And I've studied the Big Five. Mm. I understand roughly what they're trying to get at. And even then, I'm susceptible to misconstruing what the question's trying to get at, because I'm getting responses that I don't feel are very reflective of who I am. And if it's measuring my self-perception and it's still getting that wrong, then it can be limited. But in the case of the actual conscientiousness and openness, I feel like your general score is something good to go off. And I think it's important to look at it at the Big Five level rather than looking at the breakdown of each dimension, because
it might average out like the different distortions.
That's exactly, yeah. And I think that's largely how the researchers have designed it, in that it might not always be perfect, but more or less on average, it seems to reflect something. Like, you're not going to get really high scores in, I don't know, agreeableness when you're really disagreeable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not going to go that way because it's also based on your own perception as well. So,
yeah.
Unless you're really delusional, you're not going to get a really bizarre score.
Yeah. So you would say that these kind of small distortions that you might have inside the granularity of the test, then those tend to cancel out rather than all go one way.
Yeah.
Because that's a big question, right, in research, whether the noise that you have, whether it cancels out or whether it's tilted one way, and so it skews the overall results in one way. And so you need to account for that in your methodology.
Yeah, well, there's been so much research on the Big Five that we can kind of say with some degree of certainty that they are measuring real things.
Mm. It depends on that specific test, right? And so is that one test that measures the Big Five? One set test for it?
Yeah, so they have like 400 or so questions, I believe. And I think we also took the 120 question version of that, which is much quicker and saves time. But statistically speaking, it might throw a percent here and there. Yep. But it picks out the most statistically significant questions, or the most important one, and it simplifies them to 120 instead.
So whenever the Big Five is measured, it's measured with that same test. Right.
Yeah, okay. It's a uniform test.
Okay.
Normally, if you want to get the most accurate results, you do the full test. But I've in the past, when I was studying, I took the 120 and then I took the larger test, and it was more or less the same. I felt like, oh, I've just spent like half an hour, 45 minutes of my life for nothing.
Yeah, and also you're supposed to kind of ponder the questions a little bit, think about them. So when you're thinking about 400 and 350, then that takes a very long time, then like three or four hours or something like
there's
that.
There's also the fact that you get something known as cognitive exhaustion, which is like a formalized effect in psychometric tests, where if you ask people too many questions, the accuracy of the results go down the more questions they answer, which seems pretty intuitive, but is a big problem when you're designing tests that are meant to look at something very complicated, because you need lots of questions to understand it, but at the same time
so then you need to divide it and do it like half an hour each day for a month or something.
Yeah, but then at the same time
that's a good idea.
At the same time, you're gonna have a different mindset going into it as well, which is gonna shape the answers. But anyway, I actually go on to a useful study here, which is a study called The Secret Lives of Liberals and Conservatives, Personality Profiles, Interaction Styles, and the Things They Leave Behind. And that was by Carney, Jost, Gosling, and Potter in 2008. And this kind of formalizes the liberals are more open-minded.
And so they took the big five and tried to interpret the results, right?
Sure. Yeah. And they found, you know, liberals score higher on the open-mindedness thing, but they're also more creative, curious, and novelty-seeking, whereas conservatives are more orderly, conventional, and better organized. And
so it's basically a rehash of the 70s research that you mentioned in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they operationally defined conservative and liberal by either the acceptance or rejection of inequality and the preference for social change versus the preservation of societal kind of status quos.
Sounds reasonable.
Yeah, so I think that's not really that controversial for most people. And there's... sorry, I've got a really dry throat.
That's all right. Cool.
So another study is personality and political orientation, which is a meta-analysis and a test of something known as a threat constraint model. And this was looking at conservatism in times of threat, which looks at circumstances in which a person's personality might actually change depending on the environment, mm-hmm. as I was touching on earlier. And they actually found that in these situations where, say, there's nationwide homicide or national unemployment, where there's a big social problem, conservatives actually seem to correlate a little bit with openness to experience when there's this kind of systemic threat or uncertainty about the future. So it's not necessarily that people's personalities are static, even if they identify with a specific political side. It depends on the circumstances at hand. And I feel like this study is important to show that just because you might be personally inclined in a certain direction, if things change, you can be more malleable to that change.
That's actually interesting, because when you started talking about this, I expected you to say that when there is a threat, then those more liberal-minded become more conservative-minded, and not the other way around.
That wouldn't surprise me. I just didn't find any research on that. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that it doesn't exist, but the personality research is so extensive that I could spend every day of my life just reading through it. Or like, there's so much of it. So I'm sure that there has been research on that, but I haven't necessarily come across it.
Right, and so this one says the opposite. This one says that if there is something bad happening at the mm-hmm. moment, and you feel the consequences of it, and it's, mm-hmm. it's clearly bad, you're more open to considering solutions that you wouldn't consider otherwise, and that's what make you less conservative in that sense, right? And so that would be the opposite force to what I was thinking about, which would be saying that if there's a threat, then that you want that stability that provides you with some kind of solid ground to stand on to fight against that threat, which would be that opposite pull of the more liberal-minded people to the conservative side.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And mm-hmm. I mean, just anecdotally, I can kind of see that. It's kind of like how in World War II in the UK, people kind of put all of their politics aside and were just like, well, I might be, you know, socialist or a communist, but I'd rather keep the social order I have than... So it kind of moderated them, and they were more willing to work within society than otherwise. But that's only one case, and I mean, you don't want to draw too much from that.
Yep. So I actually wanted to mention one thing that...
Sure.
...that could be interesting here, which is a theory that was developed by Jonathan Haidt, and it was not actually, I looked it up earlier, I was surprised it was not actually his, but he popularized it, he developed mm-hmm. it and popularized it, but he based it on, you know, a foundation that was laid down by someone else, and it's called the Moral Foundations Theory. I don't know if you heard the name.
No, I'm not familiar with it.
It's basically looking at what people's personal characteristics are, let's say traits, but it's not related to the big five, but it's saying that you have these moral foundations that you base your decisions on, and your, you know, behavior and personality and what you are as a person. And those foundations are, there are five of them, and mm-hmm. then he added a sixth, and those five are care/harm. Those are something like axes, which on the one hand you have something good, and on the one hand something bad.
So it's like a scale.
Not necessarily, because those are it's how much you care about that value, right? It's values. And so how much you care about that value. So one of them is care/harm. The other is, second is fairness/cheating. Then loyalty/betrayal, authority/subversion, sanctity/degradation. And then a sixth that was added later is liberty/coercion, right? And so these are the values that you can have, and these values would kind of form your personality. And what he was looking at then was how these values and how these values correlate to politics. So if you, there's a questionnaire, and then that's classic, right? So you fill in a bunch of questions, and then you get those results, like how much you care about each of those things, mm-hmm. each of those values. And what he was concerned with was whether conservatives and liberals and maybe other groups and libertarians and others, whether they were relying on the same moral foundations, on the same values. And what he found was actually quite interesting, was that you have those basic five values, and liberals tend to rely only on two of those, and conservatives tend to rely on all five of those.
Okay.
And so this, like here, we can show it on the screen as well later. So you can see that liberals here are high in fairness and in harm. Like that's what they mm-hmm. that's what they care about. That's how they what they base their decisions on. And then conservatives have those two a little bit lower, but they have these three others much higher. And so they have all of these, and all of them form a basis for their decision making, right?
Sure.
And so that's an interesting way to describe that difference. That personality difference between those two groups. And I don't know if you have any comments on that, just off the top of your head.
Yeah.
Because you've not studied this.
Yeah, so I feel like the traits there seem to represent things that are more reflective of politics. And it seems like they've been more closely developed with politics in mind than the Big Five, which was just seeking to understand personality differences in general and then applied to politics. Mm-hmm. And I certainly see, particularly the liberty and what were a few of the other ones? Sorry.
Care, harm, fairness, cheating, loyalty, betrayal, authority, subversion, sanctity, degradation, liberty, coercion.
Yeah, those seem far more useful kind of measures when compared with the Big Five, where only two of them actually correlate with the different positions. Those seem to me to actually describe various different political attitudes, like the fairness and whether you're kind of pro hierarchy, pro egalitarian or equity or what have you. That seems to get at current political discussions perhaps better than the Big Five.
So what he suggests, or what they suggest, and there were two of them, Budheit is the more famous one, was that he suggested that there was a solution to the crisis of understanding between the two sides in American politics, right, and between conservatives and liberals, let's say. And so what he said that liberals need to take a look at what conservatives say, but take into account those three kind of sets of values that they themselves don't regard as important, and they have to kind of pretend, or they have to empathize with them and pretend that they are important for them and look at it from that point of view, right? Because if you only take the harm and fairness values and look at what the other side does, the other side will be unintelligible to you, because the other side bases their decisions on a lot of other values that you're not considering.
Mm-hmm. That certainly seems to describe what's going on in the United States quite well. Whereas I think it might be less true in the UK, where I think there's a bit more of an understanding, at least between the mainstream parties. But it certainly seems to be more politically oriented. And is it actually kind of framed as a measure of personality, or is it just like, is it traits to do with politics? I know you did mention traits, but
So how it's presented, at least on Wikipedia, which I think in these issues, it often has good summaries of things.
Like, yeah,
it's not that controversial in this space. So it says the moral foundation theory is a social psychological theory intended to explain the origins of and variations in human moral reasoning on the basis of innate modular foundations.
Okay.
So that's what it says. So it's not necessarily focused on politics, but it's very applicable to politics, I would say.
Yeah, sure. And I know people are going to be mentioning, oh, it's social psychology, it's all rubbish. And I'm going to take the point that I've probably made quite a few times before, that some of it is bad, but, you know, a few bad apples don't spoil the bunch.
There's still
some. Yeah. Yeah. Some of it is still useful. And I mean, I'm just as inclined to be annoyed with the woke stuff as anyone else. But I can say with a certain amount of certainty that there's a lot of useful stuff that you don't want to be throwing out along with the bad stuff.
And you said there might be a contemplations episode about that in the future at some point.
Yeah, because I feel like it needs to be cleared up. And it's one of the things that I see on the anti-woke side where it's just like, well, that social science is all rubbish. And also, the even worse version is when they throw in like just psychology in general. And like neuroscience apparently is now social science as well. Just like actual psychometric tests as well, where they've been developed statistically. Yeah, it's just social science. Like, it's just rubbish. And it's a terrible, terrible view that gets on my nerves.
It intervenes when you just want to grill.
Anyway. Snap. Right. So, am I all right to get on to the study of values?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was just, okay. I just wanted to come in with this one thing to just confirm whether it's something that you see some kind of value in, or
it's something I need to look into, really, because it seems like those measures seem to be more representative of politics, and it certainly seems like it might get to the heart of why there might be current disagreements, particularly in the United States. I feel it seems more applicable there than perhaps elsewhere.
I think they actually did it across the world, and it was quite robust. It was quite applicable, which was surprising to some people, and to a lot of people, actually, that it held its own across the world, across various cultures and differences that you would, where you wouldn't expect it to do so well.
Yeah, sure.
That's what I would say. But I'm not an expert on it.
That's a sign of a good test, though, if it can be taken out of the environment in which it was developed and applied elsewhere. Like, you could probably give a big five personality test to a tribe in the Amazon, and as long as you had the patience to explain it to them, I imagine it would still be relatively useful for them as well. But anyway, so the study of values is a alternative to the kind of big five idea. And I just wanted to look at a particular study, not necessarily a meta-analysis like some of the other ones I was talking about, just to explain, I didn't actually mention it earlier. A meta-analysis is just a study of lots of different other studies. So they can be taken as more reliable, although they can't always be perfect, and it's dependent on how they classify certain studies, and there's still some scope to make mistakes. More often than not, people are very hot on being able to spot these mistakes, and therefore, if you look at a meta-analysis, it's like a good way of getting a long study that summarizes a very wide array of years of research. And you can generally take them at face value, but not always. But they're pretty good as a useful tool.
If you spot a mistake in a popular article, well quoted article, then you're set for a good article yourself. So
that's true, yeah. And many academics actually make careers out of just pointing out other people's mistakes, which
quite sad but useful.
I can see myself doing that, to be honest. So anyway,
agreeableness high, sympathy low.
It explains everything now. So this study is known as Personality and Politics, Values, Traits and Political Choice, and was published in 2006 by Capara, Schwartz, Capanna, Vecchione and Barbarinelli.
Nice.
They're Italian.
That was good.
I didn't butcher their names, but at least they're not, there's only one German-sounding name, so I managed to deal with that. That's all right. So anyway, they got data from 3,044 Italian voters in a 2001 election, and they just studied the actual traits themselves belonging to people that either voted for the centre left or the centre right, and they found that in the centre left, voters were higher in trait friendliness, openness, but also lower in energy and conscientiousness. Mm. So you still see there's some
overlap.
Yeah, between the big five, but they're also measuring other things as well.
Right.
I just found it funny that they were lower in energy. That sounds like such an insulting thing. You got really low energy politics. But centre left voters were also higher in universalism, benevolence, which means like caring for other people, and self-direction, but they were lower in security, power, achievement, conformity, and tradition when compared with conservatives. So the conservatives scored better in security, power, achievement, conformity, and tradition, which is not really unsurprising, but I also found it funny that achievement is one of the traits and centre-left voters are just objectively lower in achievement.
I would imagine that would be kind of achievement-seeking, right? Something like that.
Yeah, well, it would be a component of it. Yeah.
So it wouldn't be like assessing how well they achieved in life, something like
There's
that.
There's also a kind of causality element in that people who haven't achieved very much have a greater incentive to be kind of centre-left, don't they? In that if they're not really successful, they're going to have an incentive to want like a higher rate of tax. Just from their own perspective, in that
that's a very, very contemporary point of view, though, like the high tax, left wing correlation and things. But I get the point I'm trying to get across
that you have an incentive when you haven't achieved as much to be more left wing, just in and of itself. So it's not necessarily that it's not necessarily causal in that people who strive for achievement actually get it. You know, lots of people who still have these conservative values may not actually be successful and achieve something. It's not purely dependent on that, and I just felt like that was an important point to make. They say here that values explained substantial variance in past and future voting and in change of political choice better than the actual personality constructs, they felt. So they felt that these values were more predictive than the big five, which I can kind of understand. And they did have quite a large sample as well, over 3,000 people. That's enough to make a reasonable assumption about it. And I think that perhaps there needs to be more research on alternative personality measures, because at the minute, the big five is a very simplistic way of looking at these differences.
Right. And especially in relation to politics, you said that it's not completely useful. There's just two measures that correlate in some way, and three of them are less relevant in when we're talking about politics.
Yeah, it's just particularly important because it's the kind of go-to personality measure in personality research, and it's got a high amount of validity when compared with many other tests that you might not find a lot in psychology, just because of the how young as a science it is.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, I would definitely see it's something useful comparing different scales and different sets of traits or sets of qualities that you can have, and figuring out which one actually maps onto the political world quite well. All right. Well, I think that's all you had prepared for today.
And that is right. Yeah.
Okay. So tomorrow we're going to be focusing on the dark traits or the dark triad. I think that's going to be the bulk of it. And this is going to be something that might be relevant to what we talked about at the beginning, the extremism stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you like that discussion, go to lotuseater.com, where you can find all our other content. There's loads of articles, lots of other podcasts. And if you want to support us, you can become a premium member there. And thank you for watching, and see you tomorrow. And
goodbye. Yeah,
goodbye.
Yeah.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.